A Christian response to the catastrophic criminality and communist chaos of the last 2 weeks. Starting on the 9th of July, unbelievable scenes that many of us thought we'd never see. The most destructive rioting in South African history, we are told. And that's saying quite something, because we've had a lot of destructive riots. But the brazen looting, the malicious damage of property, has devastated the South African economy. These riots, since the 9th of July, Friday the 9th of July 2021, which are still continuing in some areas, are being described as the worst and as the most destructive in the history of South Africa. Here you can see a Makro being literally looted, plundered from one shelf to the other. 8 factories, 11 warehouses, 200 shopping mall complexes, 161 liquor stores, and 50 schools in KwaZulu-Natal have been looted and torched. Why the schools? Who knows? I don't know if any of this really makes sense, except to a Marxist. But these scenes show you some of the mentality of entitlement and of theft and brazenness, where people, some are wearing masks, some are not, breaking through perimeter fences, stealing massive products. I mean, this looks like a massive fridge. And running across the felt, everything from getting the settees, the mattresses, looting stores, and not always running, sometimes walking, but people lining up to queue to loot a shop. And in many cases, looting shops of small people, of small holders, of neighbors, and burning up the... Why would the vehicles be burned out? Why must the windows all be smashed? There's just a maliciousness in this destruction. And piling up shopping trolleys for loot. And in macros, massive big shelves just looted from one side to the other. And in one neighborhood, a whole lot of the boxes of these stoves, fridges, other appliances just left in the middle of the road because they don't have space for all the products in there and the boxes as well. Somebody stealing a coffin even stole the trolley that they come on. I don't know what plans they had for that. People, of course, stealing the shopping trolleys to take out their loot. Massive machines like these Coca-Cola dispensers, these fridges, and in the most upmarket supermarkets as well, and people just helping themselves. Now you can see a new trend. These are the electronic tags that are put on shopping items, clothing in particular, which can only be undone at the till when you paid for the item. This means these things have obviously been shoplifted. They normally would trigger an electronic signal when you try to get out of the shop if you haven't paid. So there's a whole lot of people wearing obviously looted things. And absolute traffic jam chaos of looters trying to get their products away from the shopping centres. This unbelievable scene, still from a video, of a mother throwing her little toddler from a burning building. Looters had set the building on fire, and the mother threw the baby to people to receive it to get the baby away from the fire. But can you imagine such a scene? And there has also been devastation. And these are just some of the scenes afterwards, and in many cases not just plundered, but set to the torch. And the amount of things left behind, debris, perhaps people first rushed out and then they separate the item from the box, and in the rush to get out, this looks like a war zone. And in some cases it is a war when you realize what's been going on here. Destruction of vehicles, warehouses, and trucks. In these cases, these 18-wheeler trucks, the Ethekwini municipality in KwaZulu-Natal, which includes Durban, calculates that the damage to infrastructure, property, and equipment in their municipality alone exceeds 15 billion rand. That's over $1 billion. So the destruction, the unbelievable cost of all this, the price tag, the Durban municipality also noted that 150,000 jobs have been lost in the community and in their municipality alone. 40,000 businesses have been impacted, most of whom may never recover. And additionally, 50,000 informal traders have lost their livelihoods, and 1.5 million people have lost their potential to earn income. That's in the Durban municipality. And these are some of the scenes in shopping malls the day after, so to speak. Chaos, debris, litter, smashed, broken, and you can hardly imagine what these businesses were like before. This is the exits from the everything from Macros, Food Lovers Markets, Ackermans. Just the cost of products, the cost of the infrastructure, of everything in these, all of this that's been lost. We're talking about billions and billions of rands worth of damage. And then, of course, burning tires and roads. Nothing is more expressive of this kind of mindless mayhem than to destroy roads, which gives us potholes later on after you've had burning tires in them. And the litter, the chaos, the debris, and whole warehouses just burned to the ground. Pharmacies looted. South African Pharmacy Council reports that 90 pharmacies have been destroyed and looted beyond recovery, and this has led to the closing of all Clicks and Dis-Chem pharmacies in KwaZulu-Natal. Entire fridges of insulin and other medicines were looted from these pharmacies as well. In fact, you can see people running down roads with fridges on their heads. Not only have all the shelves in these pharmacies been looted, but even the pharmacy computers, with the entire patient database record lost as a result. Now, if you've had to queue at any Clicks or Dis-Chem for scheduled medicines, then you know what this involves. Tens of thousands, ultimately hundreds of thousands of patients will need to make appointments with their doctors to have new prescriptions issued for their chronic medication treatments, because these medicines can't be issued without those prescriptions, and those prescriptions have now been lost by the looters. And just think of the cost, the transport, the time, the backlog, and how many people might suffer everything all the way through to death before they get those scheduled medicines organized again. And communication towers put out of action. Independent Communications Authority reports 113 cell phone towers vandalized. Why? Who benefits from that? Interrupting people's communications. And arson. The South African Cane Growers Association reports that over 353,000 tons of sugar were lost to arson. This amounts to more than 211 million rand in lost revenue. The destruction of all this sugar in the middle of harvesting season has caused irrecoverable losses to cane growers and workers. And if you think of the consequences of this, anything that you have that uses sugar, well, the prices are going to go up, obviously. In the middle of harvesting season, the main supplier, not just for the country, but for the whole continent in many ways, this is going to be staggering in its ripple effect. Not just arson, but anarchy. The chief executive of the South African Property Owners Association calculates that the shopping malls and retail outlets in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng have suffered an excess of 20 billion rands worth of damage in the last 10 days. 20 billion rands worth? That's over £1 billion, more than €1 billion. And that's just beginning of the calculations. There's more coming. Well, the police were missing at the beginning of all this, but when they finally came onto the scenes, mainly the private security companies had secured areas and brought in some form of order. And then the police came in, but in many cases the police were actually ill-equipped and they were able to retrieve some items. But take some posts like this. A CEO of a financial institution was arrested for participating in the looting. Looting liquor and a washing machine, other accessories in Durban, braai accessories. Yeah, this wasn't just poor people. This is some rich people. You can see videos of people loading up the Mercedes Benzes and so on. And then Hammersdale, which is just outside of Durban, they had a mob that was intimidating the police and the fire brigade. This is Sunday the 18th of July, just this week. A KwaZulu-Natal cold storage facility, massive one, was set on fire. Mobs then deterred the police from escorting the fire brigade engines who they were responding to the fire. And then the stone throws forced the fire brigade to flee while the Hammersdale fire continued to rage. So when the police flee and the fire brigade comes under fire, well, that means the fire's not dealt with and the destruction's even worse. Romans 3 verse 13 says, "Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. And the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes." This is one SAPOA counting the cost inventory list to give an infographic that one can just grasp the amount of damage in their area. But just look how it's 50 Edgar's stores and Massmart 31 stores, Mr. Price 109 stores, Pep stores 489, worst hit. Spars 184 Spars, Woolworths 11. 1,400 ATMs damaged, just staggering when you look at the amount of damage to, as they put it, 200 shopping centres looted and damaged. Business Unity South Africa have stated that the economic damage caused by this anarchy will be long-lasting and will be felt across the board. In other words, everyone in the country is going to suffer. Everyone's going to pay more for products and have shortages. There's going to be shortages of all sorts of things. The result in the loss of jobs because of businesses not having the confidence to continue operating will exacerbate an already high unemployment rate. It's not like things were going well before the lockdown lunacy hit. But after this, a lot of businesses that are on the ropes already are not going to recover. And these events are being reported on globally, resulting in a significant loss of confidence in a country as an investment destination. This is economist talk, but basically saying, who wants to invest in a country where everything you've built up over years can suddenly get burned out and looted in a day, an afternoon, an evening? And the mentality of people who are just willing to rip everything together, where did they come from? What were they taught in school? Where's their churches? What are they taught in their families? Do they have families? This at a time when we're competing with more positive destinations in different parts of the world. In other words, there's many countries where investments are safer, where the police actually protect life and property, and they don't go AWOL the moment that there's significant need. Bucer calculates that Sasra, the state-owned insurance company, does not have the resources to compensate business owners for the over 12 billion rand in claims so far, and this is going to increase. In fact, they say there's no way they could even cope with 5% of the claims that's coming. This will lead to massive shutdowns, increased unemployment. So the politicians who've incited this, who claim to be for the poor, are hurting the poorest of the poor. This has been described as more destructive than war. Economist Mike Schisler has noted that the financial losses for South Africa will be far more than the billions of rands of destroyed property and looted products. The looting of over 200 shopping malls and tens of thousands of businesses and the blocking of national highways will have a severe impact on distribution. It's going to severely impact business and consumer confidence in South Africa. Internally, externally, it's going to be a global impact on our economy. Many people are going to see this, and whether rightly or wrongly, whether exaggerated or not, they will decide to invest elsewhere. And this will lead to further devaluation of the rand currency. I mean, make no mistake, devaluation is on the cards. Escalation of prices, devaluation of currency, millions more unemployed, and the result will be all kinds of other negative things. Massive, long-lasting harm to the country's economy as a whole. You can't destroy people's businesses like this and not expect severe ripple effect repercussions. And as you can see, the South African economy is going down, and we are in the negative, and we have been in the negative for many years. And now, after all this COVID, this is like pretty much the last straw as far as economic confidence in the country goes. There's loss of life. According to Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, they report that the prevention of the provision of essential medical healthcare delivery by blocking patients from traveling, blocking medical staff from traveling, blocking critical supplies from reaching medical facilities. All of this will cost even more lives, which isn't even being listed as people who've died as a result of the violence in the riots. Apparently, a hospital was also targeted. According to Police Minister Becky Seely, he claims that South African law enforcement agencies' intelligence gathering averted the burning of a hospital full of patients in Durban. Well, where was the Ministry of Defence? Minister of Defence Mapisika Kakula stated that these riots have been a learning curve, a very expensive learning curve, and that they were caught with their pants down. The Minister of Defence claims that it never occurred to us that we should move to areas like shopping malls when the deployment of soldiers started, focusing on key national points like oil refineries and at airports. Why they thought that, I have no idea. It's not like this sort of thing hasn't happened before. Just take the BLM riots in America last year. Where'd they go? Not oil refineries and airports. They went to shopping malls. I mean, this is what political rabble-rousers do. It's quick to incentivize people to loot because they've got tangible things to show for it. Burning an airport and burning an oil refinery doesn't actually benefit the greed of the individuals taking part in it, like running to a shopping mall. So the Minister of Defence, so-called, said that the government had not expected people to attack shopping malls, like it's never happened before, apparently. And therefore, there were no soldiers in the shopping centres. No jokes, there were not. Private security companies are responsible to protect businesses, not the state. This is the quote of the Minister of Defence. Minister of Defence stated it was primarily the responsibility of private security companies to protect businesses and shopping malls. Did you know that? I wondered what we're actually spending taxes for. Why do we actually have a government if not to protect lives and property? What do you have a defence force for? What do you have a police force for if not to protect lives and property? Private security companies are there because of the failure of government. She described the private security companies as well-armed and well-organised and in the main responsible security in securing private properties and businesses. Now, this is a fascinating piece of information, actually, because the ANC government is at this time trying to pass a Firearm Control Act to disarm private citizens. And in fact, to disarm private security companies too is one of their goals. Because the South African Police Service publicly expressed their appreciation for the role played by private security companies in protecting lives and property, even while the Minister of Police is condemning them for vigilantism. So, you know, you've got mixed messages coming from different sides. But the private security companies bore the brunt. They did most of the work, and then private civilians, in capturing those looters that were captured. And then the military mobilized to counter economic sabotage and terrorism. I don't know what you're thinking when you see this, but I think photo op, PRO. I mean, really and truly, what use is a tank? So, what is it going to do? I mean, are they going to fire 90mm shells at anyone? What is it there for? The only reason it's there is for a picture that the government can send around the world saying we're doing something. But all South African National Defence Force reserves were called up to deal with this widespread economic sabotage and domestic terrorism. Interesting, they're calling what they normally call protests, suddenly it's economic sabotage and domestic terrorism, which is what I thought these things always were, but for years I've been calling it protests. And I don't know what this picture tells, but these people don't look that concerned. if that soldier was really protecting lives and property, I think he'd be aiming that gun straight at them and, you know, drop that right now. But anyway, I'm not sure what this picture is telling, but it doesn't seem to indicate great concern in the mind of this rioter who, I presume, has taken that concrete block to either throw through a window or to block a road. Now, have you noticed how the police and army were deployed to already looted, already ransacked areas? Thank you. Very helpful. So why were SANDF troops stationed inside and outside shops that had already been completely looted after the minister got flak for not seeing troops at the shops? So instead of going to the shops that haven't been looted to protect them, they go to the shops that have already been looted. What is this window dressing for the media or photo op, photographic opportunity? Why is this being done? It's just to appease the media for sure. And so you've got these sort of pictures. Well, a little late now, don't you think? Would have been nice to have had you there a few hours earlier. But this is the kind of media picture we've got. You know the saying, don't shut the stable door after the horse has bolted. A little late. Ah, the horse has bolted. Let's lock the stable door. Absolutely pointless afterwards. And so, right, getting the police there, what good's that? Murder and Marxist mayhem, that's what this is. It's Marxist. The official death toll has risen to 276. And, by the way, that's going to rise much more because there's one, just one of the mortuaries in Phoenix has got over 300 uncounted for bodies. 300, that's one place in the Greater Durban municipality area. And their capacity is 500. They've got more than 500, they're at max capacity, but they're 300, that's unidentified bodies. So, of course, there would be normal car accidents and normal crime, I guess. But they said there's 300 completely unaccounted for bodies that's in there. Now, if that's just Phoenix, well, the death toll in the whole province has got to be higher than this. So, let's wait and see what happens. But at Ndafwa Mall in Midland, Soweto, 10 people died in a stampede of looting. That means they were trampled to death by other looters. Police in KwaZulu-Natal were investigating 91 cases, including 38 murder charges. In Gauteng, police investigated 19 murders and 26 inquests, but this is out-of-date information. The police stated that most of the inquest dockets are relating to people trampled to death in stampedes during looting of shops and malls, where other deaths and injuries related to ATM bank machine explosions and shootings. So when you're trying to blow up an automatic teller machine outside a bank and either you blow yourself up or injure passers-by who didn't know that you'd set the explosives there on a timer or whatever it was. So these are accounting for many of the injuries. Other deaths were related to explosions and shootings. Who knows how many accidents have been caused by this? Well, unbelievably, many looters have been released from police custody. And as some have pointed out, Police Commissioner Saley is more concerned about the surfers, sunbathers, social distancing violators, bootleg liquor when they were banning that, and cigarette smugglers. You know, things like burning shopping centres down and murders, not quite as high a priority apparently. The Democratic Alliance in KwaZulu-Natal has complained to the Provincial Southern Police Service Commissioner concerning reports that suspected looters arrested in the province were released without charge due to a shortage of food at Pinetown Police Station. This is absolutely unbelievable. You know, if you've got looters there, so what if they don't get a meal tonight? You know, and can't you make a plan for tomorrow? You release looters without charge because you've got a shortage of food at the place? What on earth is going on here, and where's the organizational ability? And so, do you remember how busy the police were? Even Saley himself going onto the beaches in order to arrest foreign tourists because they're walking on the beaches in the heat of summer. Who'd want to go to the beach in the heat of summer? You can go on the beach only in the middle of winter. Not when it's hot, when everyone wants to go to the beach. And so, remember how many hundreds of police they could mobilize to keep people from swimming at Hermanus in January and things like that? So, here's one person who's posted something saying, during COVID lockdown 2020, you deployed 74,000 troops to Donner and Blix and civilians to enforce regulations, and we're the same troops now when the country's burning. And that's a good point, because remember March 2020 last year when millions of South Africans were going to die of COVID in the next months, and the police and army were everywhere, ubiquitous, they're stopping you driving in your own areas, and massive amounts of armoured cars and police vehicles and so on, all so they could scratch the back of your brain out and get tests. And when we just wanted to protest about masks, boy, there was police in great numbers. And as has been pointed out, it's been proven now and tested that during lockdown, not only were they confiscating liquor to drink it themselves, they killed dogs that barked at them. They beat up people, they hit, stole people, and they shot people under trying to keep you from getting the COVID. But where are they when there's real looters and real threat? And to help people survive the COVID cult lockdown lunacy, the ANC received 62 billion rand from the IMF and 14 billion rand from the New Development Bank and 500 billion from the national budget, and just disappeared. Sorry, nothing left for those businesses we've destroyed and all those people's lives we've wrecked. And so, as many people are pointing out, we blame the looters, as we should, but aren't they just doing what the national leaders have done? National leaders have looted the country, they're looting the local shopping malls. Is there a qualitative difference? Is there an ethical difference? The government has looted the treasury and stolen from everybody in the country, and now a whole of their followers are looting from businesses and their communities. I mean, it's both reprehensible, but is there much of a difference between Ramaphosa's looting and these guys looting? By the way, while we're talking about the lockdown lunacy, COVID cult, this post, this billboard was put up by Sanitize, which is a PPE provider. They provide personal protection equipment, PPE, and they put this up on the M5. And Colin saw it, and he said, that's interesting. And 2 days later, it was down. And next thing, there's newspaper headlines about how this was forced down because of community standards. And, you know, gee, they can't deal with pornography or human trafficking. Mavericks can advertise blatantly openly. They can have human trafficked slaves, and that's not a problem. You know, gee, there's got to be freedom of speech out there, you know. Be tolerant to you bigoted Christians. But this was down in 2 days. Now, billboards are rented for a minimum of a month. So they must have paid for at least a month of this to be up there. Gone in 2 days. Now, why would... What's so offensive about this? Notice it's a question mark. In Gates you trust? Question mark. In God we trust. No vaccine for us. Is that... And this violates community standards. How does this violate community standards? What is so offensive about this? We used to have a sense of humor. We used to have freedom of speech. It's unacceptable that this sort of thing gets closed down. Well, here's another shocker. Is during the riots, over 1.9 million rounds of ammunition was stolen from a secure police facility within Durban police station. 1.9 million rounds out of two containers, stolen on police grounds. Well, that must really help fuel something, whether it's revolutionaries, criminals, whether it was sold to gangs, but yet they want you to hand over your gun to the police, even though the police lose them or sell them to criminals quicker than anybody possibly could. Even community radio stations have been attacked, can you believe it? Community radio stations have been attacked, looted. Sipu Matau, operations manager for MAMS FM, that's Mamelodi FM, reported that all their offices were vandalized, including their broadcasting studios, their computers, their laptops, microphones stolen. These things cost a lot of money. And the transmitter was also damaged and broken to the ground. Why would you do that? You know, people stealing a computer, bad though that is, you can understand they're getting some benefit. It's a valuable piece of equipment. Break the transmitter? That's more like terrorism. You're trying to destroy an ability to communicate another opinion. Banks and automatic teller machines, ATMs ransacked, 1,400. Mike Brown, CEO of Nedbank, reported damage to 50 branches of Nedbank, that's 50 banks, 300 Nedbank ATMs attacked. Half of all Nedbank branches in the country have been closed as a result. Well, in total, 1,400 automatic teller machines were damaged by looters, and 300 banks and post offices were vandalized, just in this last less than 2 weeks. Just get an impression of this kind of traffic jam chaos caused by the looting spree. Catastrophic collapse of investor confidence. These pictures are being seen from around the world. This is being shown on Fox News and BBC, and people. What are people around the world thinking? In fact, several of the broadcasts have tuned in to start off with, what is going on in South Africa? I'm sorry. That's a good question. Mr. Brown pointed out that the damage to investor confidence caused by such criminal destruction of property will be catastrophic. The damage is much more on our ability to attract investment over the longer term, either externally or internally. If people do not have the security of the rule of law as a foundation, they simply will not take the risk, and rightly so. The riots have come at a time when the country can least afford it. And that's a fact. Why would you invest your money in a country that's so unstable when you can invest in a place like Singapore where there's tremendous rule of law? Then there's the xenophobic attacks on foreigners. Minister of State Security, Ayanda Delgado, reported that her department is looking into xenophobic attacks on foreigners whose businesses seem to be a particular focus of rioters and looters. Anne Michaels of the Africa Diaspora Forum said migrants were a particular focus of rioters in Hillbrow and Melbourne, and she reported that all she could do was advise them to protect themselves since the police were unable to. Well, maybe she's being polite. I don't know if they were unable to or unwilling to. There's a big difference. Now, was this orchestrated domestic terrorism? ADF spokesman Amir Sheikh described that what they were facing is domestic terrorism. This is domestic terrorism, he said. I do not believe that this thing is sporadic because it's well executed and well funded. That's a good observation. It was so coordinated, so simultaneous, so strategic, so targeted, so getting warehouses, distribution points, the lifelines of the country. How can this be something spontaneous? Now, former senior members of state security are alleged to be involved in this. Independent data surveillance expert Murray Hunter has reported the involvement of senior ex-state security agents aligned to former President Jacob Zuma. In other words, they're ANC members who were senior members of state security agency. Maybe they've been pushed out since Ramaphosa came to power because they were more aligned with Jacob Zuma, but the state security minister confirmed to journalists that the agency is investigating information about the alleged involvement of senior ex-agents aligned to former President Jacob Zuma. This is intriguing because here we've got people saying we need a state of emergency. But state of emergency is martial law. Martial law is when you are run by the military and state security. But they're saying the people who initiated, orchestrated, coordinated these riots were people from state security agency. Now, it's more complicated than that. There's others saying, no, this is organized by the government themselves to blame on Zuma's supporters. And so what you've got is one group of the ANC blaming another group of the ANC, and they're blaming the leading group of the ANC as being the ones who've initiated. So the main culprits that you've got here is either it is the ANC under Ramaphosa today, or it's the ANC that is aligned and loyal to the former President Jacob Zuma, but those are the only two candidates for this, that either the ANC or the ANC organized and coordinated and orchestrated these riots. State security is saying former state security agents organized it, and the former state security agents are saying, well, the present state security agency has organized it, and they're blaming us as a scapegoat. And the solution is, let the military industrial complex run the country without having any rights of freedom of movement, freedom of speech, and so on. And so a state of emergency would be the dumbest thing to do. Because basically what you're wanting to do is put the hen house in charge of the foxes. The police minister, Becky Seely, reports that several names of former intelligence officers have come up as instigating the riots and looting. They're working to arrest those responsible for planning the widespread protest actions. Now, he used the word protest actions. How can you call rampant looting and terrorism and arson protest? That's just insane. This is a policeman who should know the difference between protest and violence. Protest by definition are peaceful. Riots by definition cannot be a protest because protest, we know what protests are. We do protest. They're life change. They're standing up for the rights of life, people and babies, opposing pornography, standing up for the rights of women, things like this. And we don't even leave litter. We don't break anything. We don't damage anything. We don't hurt anyone. That's a protest. But still, is this not disturbing that the president, the police chief, the minister of defense, the head of state security, are all blaming ANC members who were senior involved in government and in state security as coordinating and orchestrators, such as former Umhosi FM and SABC presenter Ngizwe Matshuna. Now, this is a very well-known broadcaster, and yes, he said a lot of incendiary type of things on radio, which is actually part of freedom of speech in some ways. He's part of the Free Jacob Zuma movement and so on. But I don't know that this radio presenter has actually told people to get out and loot and burn, but he's certainly been campaigning for Free Jacob Zuma, and he's got a lot of arguments with. Now, this is somebody who's not in intelligence, but he's involved in the media. Are you now going to arrest people in the media because they're advocating a different view? That's interesting that he's one of the first that they wanted to blame. Well, a whole lot of people are being rounded up and put on trial for the looting, but what I'd like to see is the coordinators and orchestrators for it being identified. But at the moment, this looks like some of the lower-level characters, just like what normally happens in the poaching. They get the low-level poachers, but what about the coordinators, often even high up in government and sandbox? It would be nice to get the coordinators and organizers for a change. Well, it's encouraging to see some looted items being recovered by police and being returned. That's positive. Big question is, were these riots orchestrated? That is the question. Reportedly, the riots have so far claimed over 276 lives and over 3,000 people have been arrested, although tens of thousands were involved. Numerous investigators are claiming that there's evidence that the violence is part of a carefully orchestrated plan being executed by senior security operatives tied to former President Jacob Zuma. Well, that would be convenient, and that would be an ideal scapegoat, and the timing would be just perfect for the state, who's already under fire for... They were a total failed state before lockdown. They're a more failed state after lockdown. To be able to blame things on COVID and to blame things on Zuma supporters, that definitely would tie into who benefits, is the question to ask. I'm not convinced that this whole thing was done by Zuma supporters. It's possible, but there's another possibility too. The Defend Our Democracy campaign claims that the beneficiaries of state capture corruption played their ultimate card by orchestrating the riots as a smokescreen to enable them to keep the ill-gotten billions stolen from the taxpayers. I'm sure that that's true. But the beneficiaries of state capture are not just friends of Jacob Zuma. What Jacob Zuma's stolen is small fry compared to what a whole lot of others have been involved, including the present administration. So, very nice to have this sort of thing here. I wonder if that was, you know, this just looks like propaganda where it's easy to have a scapegoat. I do not know, and I certainly am not buying this, but this is just Jacob Zuma's guys have organized all this. That's awfully convenient, and it fits the narrative. It's just like, you remember when Americans would have some kind of terrorist thing and then suddenly they've got it's Timothy McVeigh or it's Osama bin Laden, you know, you've got your Lee Harvey Oswald and a lone gunman, Sifundis, stabbed the Prime Minister in Pavut and Cape Town, and, you know, it's all wrapped up. There's no conspiracy, keep walking, nothing to see here. And so they've got the solution before they've even done the investigations. I'm always suspicious when they've already got a narrative to explain what made it, what is behind it all, before you've even done forensics. I don't know that at this stage anyone can say what exactly is the whole story. But they've got a narrative in the media, and this is part of it. So, here's News 24. The failed state. Here's the bad news. Good people, you're on your own. The abject failure of the state to detect, prevent, police the outbreak of violence, particularly in cities and towns in KwaZulu-Natal, will reverberate in the South African psyche for decades to come. People will remember last week, no soothing words by Ramaphosa or any of his ministers can take away that feeling of absolute hopelessness and despair as he watched business after business being stripped and torched. The state failed its citizens, particularly those from KwaZulu-Natal in the darkest hour. What does this mean for the future of South Africa, the ANC and its people? That's a series of good questions, because that's the fact. The primary purpose of government is to protect its citizens, protect lives and property, rule of law. And at the moment they were needed, they were AWOL. Totally absent. Not involved. And people were on their own. Now, economic sabotage indeed. Just think of the destruction involved. Electricity and water infrastructure come under attack. Communications infrastructure damaged. Lifelines for distribution of goods and services like the N3 and N2 blocked. How many trucks torched? Burned out Pentechnicons, 18-wheelers. Warning, average speed prosecution. Well, it would be much nicer if it could actually protect the trucks on the road. Potable water. Now, I mean, just seeing this truck should let you know of the failure of the state. The fact that you have to take vehicles that were probably designed for transporting fuel, that you've got to transport water that can be drunk or used for cooking, indicates a complete failure of the most basic duty of municipalities, which is clean drinking water coming through the taps through plumbing. Now, NGOs, non-governmental organizations caring for the poor have been devastated. Food Forward SA has reported that their main warehouse in KwaZulu-Natal has been looted and vandalized on Wednesday last week, forcing it to shut down operations. Now, Food Forward SA supplies more than 4 million meals a month to the poor through 1,200 NGOs. This is a major distribution hub. And they got ransacked and vandalized. Its main warehouse in KZN was left with no stock, and it's been forced to close. The managing director, Andy Duplessis, report that as of the poorest of the poor who relied on the meals from the NGOs that they supply, it's the poorest of the poor who will suffer. I mean, the strategicness of destroying this hub of the most amount of meals being provided for the poor. Food Forward SA has had to suspend operations in Johannesburg out of concern for the safety of their staff members. Well, now we've got state security saying there's a clearly orchestrated plan of sabotage. Would it be nice if they could have told us that ahead of time, or prevented or headed off, or actually mobilized the army before the shopping centre were looted? Deputy Minister of State Security, that's like the South African equivalent of the CIA, Zizi Kodwa says the riots and looting have been a clearly orchestrated plan of economic sabotage. We have been following up in terms of domestic stability. The intelligence has been on a roll. The plot was big. Part of targeting moles was part of agitating what is called popular revolt, so that the people at the end of the day abuse and exploit the socio-economic conditions, which at the end of the day, those who loot do not understand the bigger plan. In other words, they don't realize that they're being used to destroy themselves and enrich others. Well, this is interesting because the government's been saying they had no prior knowledge of this coming. The state security says they had lots of information of this coming and their intelligence was on a roll and they knew about it. And as soon as they said, they could tell you what it was and who's been planning it and orchestrating it, why. And so here the government's saying, we had no idea this was coming. I was like, yes, we knew exactly this was coming. Now, while we're about this, do you remember Gun-Free South Africa has been advocating for a Gun-Free South Africa as a solution to all of our problems? So somebody put this out calling all Gun-Free South Africa board members and supporters to please report to the nearest shopping mall in KZN and Gauteng. They need the Gun-Free solutions urgently to get the looters to stop their criminal behavior and stop the anarchy. Maybe you can ask them nicely. We wait. Gun-Free is no guarantee. Well, the failure of the government has led to a lot of local initiatives. And there's some great stories. And this I just got in, which is interesting. This is from a community in Mayville. Mayville is just outside of Durban. And Captain Satoli knew that this mob was heading for his area because he is monitoring the social media. And he saw that they were mobilizing to loot and torch his shopping mall, which he was right next to, the police station was right next to the shopping mall, and the petrol station, which was on the other side of it. They're all going to get looted and torched. So he's only got 4 police officers to protect the supermarket and the police station and the engine garage. So he, of course, contacts higher up for support, resupply, backup. You're on your own, he's told. We can't supply any help. And so Captain Satoli, credit to him, doesn't desert his post as many others didn't flee, but he called on the community police forum, the CPF, and the community police forum instantly mobilized 60 armed citizens who swamped the area, protected the shopping mall, protected the garage, protected the police station. And police station, the police captain said that he was so moved, he said, these people of the community, they came forward, they left their homes, they left their comfort, they left their safety, and they spent the whole night on the roads barricading, doing access control, and they provided ammunition to police who were out of supplies. They'd been pleading for months and years for the police high ups to provide them with tear gas, with rubber bullets, nothing. But here the local citizens, who the police commissioner wants to put out of business and disarm, by the way, but here, reporting from Captain Satoli from Mabel Police Station, if it was not because of the CPF, that's the Community Police Forum, the garage would not be here anymore. Some places around are completely looted. If you go south of Durban, some areas there are no shops. Clearwood is finished. Montclair is finished. But because of the Community Police Forum, because of their commitment, we have the shops still here and our community is safe. I mean, that's one very nice report, which is intriguing. And so, in the face of such widespread failure of government and of the criminal justice system, numerous communities organized to protect their lives and protect their livelihoods, and others mobilized volunteers to clean up the mess and rebuild the devastated communities. Some of you have probably seen this video footage on the internet where a community lined up to protect access to their community and fired on the rioters and kept them at bay. And these are some of what they were dealing with and to face off of that. But again, where's the police? Others came out with golf clubs, baseball bats and hockey sticks. I wouldn't want to be using those alone. Others seem to have had access to more serious weaponry. And others brought out razor wire to barricade off their areas. There was communities that rallied to protect and all kinds of well-armed individuals turned up. There's one picture of a man in his wheelchair with his rifle and protecting their shop. You know, good for him. I think this is an Indian community. Is this Phoenix area or where? Outstanding. Good PMB guy. Now, Professor John Lott in America wrote the book some years ago on more guns, less crime. And then he followed up with gun control myths. John Lott, after something like a decade and a half of intensive study, he found that the more guns there are in a community, the less crime there is. And that the less guns, the more crime. And so the title of his one book was More Guns, Less Crime. And he totally demolishes the gun control myths. And he used to believe in them. He used to be a liberal who believed we should get rid of all the legal guns in private hands and it's going to produce utopia. But the more he looked at the facts, it's absolutely the opposite, which is why Switzerland's one of the safest countries in the world, because Switzerland doesn't have an army, Switzerland is an army, and every home's got weapons of war and lots of it, and mountains of ammo, and you know, home invasions in Switzerland are unknown, and the murder rate there is the lowest in any industrialized country in the world. And the fact is, any country that's well armed has little crime. And you can see that in America. So if you go to a community in America where there's hordes of weapons, like Idaho, you don't get much crime. But if you go to a place where there's no private guns allowed, let's just think Chicago and Detroit and New York, they have the worst gun violence anywhere. And so you can go just across the river to Virginia, where there's lots of guns, and it's fairly peaceful. You go across into Washington, D.C., massive amount of gun violence because no guns are allowed in Washington, D.C. And the trouble is, when law-abiding people cannot have weapons, the criminals have a monopoly of weapons, and criminals prefer unarmed victims. So this is something that's been studied elsewhere, but we've just seen it in this last 2 weeks. Does a flash drive make you a hacker? Does a knife make you a slasher? Does a lighter make you an arsonist? Well, how does a gun make you a criminal? It's a tool. And so cold metal inanimate objects don't cause crime. A bad workman blames his tools. Here you can see a community that very creatively made use of shopping carts, which interlocked, make very good barricades, which are easily movable in one direction, but not laterally. You can't easily drive through that. That really reinforces, that's a pretty good mobile barrier. And those communities that protected their petrol stations from getting looted, they next thing had massive queues, because there's a lot of places where you don't have a shopping centre, you don't have a petrol station, you don't have a pharmacy. And so there's long queues now in KZN for people going to places that do have, but they're still standing. And then there's a resilience of those communities that have put together aid for communities that are now struggling and suffering and don't have any access to good foods, and people are flown in to a place of need. Now, truckers were being targeted in the N3 and the N2. Well, this farmer, I forgot his first name, but surname's Van der Merwe, he opened up his farm to truckers who were stranded in the N3. They went either way, they're going to get torched and petrol bombed. 300 trucks found sanctuary on his farm that he opened up fields for, and the community came together and they fed them and cared for them while they were there. But, you know, it's this sort of thing that just shows you there still are good people out there. And South Africans have to be resilient and resourceful. We've had to operate under a bewildering array of BBB, EE, affirmative action, race, quota, regulations, 114, I believe, regulations, regular scheduled power failures that they want to call load shedding. In load shedding, you've got so much, you're giving away some free, but in fact, it's the opposite of that. It's a power failure. Interruption of plumbing services, water crises, interruption of all that. Irrational lockdown lunacy regulations designed to strangle businesses and industries. We must have some of the most resourceful farmers and businessmen on the planet to be able to operate under this kind of environment. But here's a community in Joburg. They got 32,000 loaves of bread and drove it down to a community in Durban. By the way, just notice that shotgun over here. They provided their own security. Yeah, he's got a very short-barreled one. They provide their own truck, own transport, own security, and they drove through to a community in Durban, 32,000 loaves of bread to donate. And there's others who've come along to clean up and sweep up and fix up, and what a mess. Wat een gemors. But somebody's got it cleaned up, and there are some volunteers out there trying to do what they can, trying to make a difference. You know, we can be part of the problem or we can be part of the solution. Here's a newspaper, the Daily Maverick, saying, this is us. Well, some of us are looters and some of us are good neighbors. I mean, they're good Samaritans, they're good neighbors, and there's some thieves and criminals as well. So which is us? They're those who are trying to tear us apart and they're those who are holding us together. That's interesting to get from a secular newspaper observing. So again, the question is to everybody, are you part of the problem or are you part of the solution? You know, it's one thing to curse the darkness, but it's another thing to light a candle. But a failed state leads to secession movements. I mean, let's notice, with South Africa becoming more and more of a failed state, and there's no worse failure than a failure to protect property. And you can see this person smiling at the policeman. You know, it's like, you can't even catch me, and it's not like she's built like some long-distance runner, but she knows that the policeman can't even catch her. And so the attitude, the police, they can't even catch those they can see and catch and act. They're that useless. So it's not surprising that secession movements like CAPEX are growing in popularity and support. And last I heard, CAPEX was over the 800,000 mark and growing strong. We've set up a capeofgoodhope.africa website, which has links to all the different Cape independent secessionist movements and a whole lot of great resources, some of which we recorded here at the Reformation Society on the different basis of reclaiming your community, successful secession movements and history in the Bible, and eyewitnesses to successful secession movements and a case for Cape independence. So audios, videos, PowerPoints, links to Facebook pages, websites, articles, and the handbook for Cape independence, all freely available on that capeofgoodhope.africa website. But respect for life, respect for property, respect for the rule of law are absolutely essential for any society. Lawlessness is a recipe for the destruction of any economy. It cannot hold together. The first duty of government is to protect life and property and ensure respect for law and order. And you feel for those diligent policemen who are trying because they are swimming upstream. It's very hard, especially when the high-ups don't back them up and don't give them the ammunition and the tear gas and so on that they've requested for months and years. The Bible is very clear that God has instituted civil government as an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. That is the primary duty of government. Civil governments are called to be a minister of God's justice, a deacon of God's justice, to punish those who do wrong. That is their duty. The Bible makes it clear that the primary duties and responsibilities of any civil authority is the protection of law-abiding citizens and a punishment to law-breaking criminals. If they would just do that, we would be ecstatic. But they want to do everything else, including telling you what you've got to wear in your face and whether you can worship or not and whether you're allowed to sing. And they want to tell you everything, right down to what kind of toxic substances you've got to have pumped into your bloodstream. But they don't want to do their job, which is protect life and property. Psalm 101 reminds us the duty of God-honoring rulers is to destroy the wicked, to root out evil, to protect the law-abiding. What we are seeing now is the results of propaganda, indoctrination and entitlement propaganda. The recent devastating riots and looting spree highlights the consequence of decades of secular, humanist, situation ethics, indoctrination in state schools. The result of officially sanctioned promote sense of entitlement. I deserve this. You know, other people's work and property and things that people have spent their lifetime building up, I can burn down without the slightest sense of responsibility because I'm a good person. I'm a very good person and I deserve this. And a very highly irresponsible news media which has persistently described violent riots as protest. I mean, even here, protest. Why do you need to have an alert if there's a protest? I mean, how can a protest be any threat to you? It's because they're lying. This is 1984 George Orwell newspeak. It's not a protest. Protest, they don't need to warn the people in Cape Town on the 1st of February, Africa Christian Action is having a life change. We don't stone cars. We don't burn things. We just march to Parliament. We have placards. We distribute literature. We speak against and we pray against abortion. We don't burn anybody's anything. And so a protest isn't a threat to anyone. But the fact that they've got to put stuff in, but they can't even tell the truth. Why don't they put their alert riots or terrorists or something that speaks more, you know, stone throwers? But no, protests. Well, this is just shows you governments can't even tell the truth on something like this. But along with glamorizing rioters and terrorists, such as Nelson Mandela, who we've just passed the Mandela Day, 18th of July, which is a United Nations worldwide day, Nelson Mandela killed people. He was a terrorist. He was the head of Umkhonto we Sizwe. He supported the bombing of people. He supported the church street bombing. He personally was responsible for Operation Maibu. He was the architect, which included the manufacture and use of hundreds of thousands of grenades and petrol bombs and so on, including a petrol bomb, suitcase petrol bomb, in Johannesburg Station, which killed a grandmother and burned, like most of her granddaughter, who was scarred for life. That's the kind of person we've got to honor as an example. After the Boston bombing in 2013, which was disgusting, which killed two people, the Boston bombing, President Obama said, "Nothing justifies the placing of bombs in public places. Any targeting of civilians with violence is terrorism," to which I say a hearty amen. One thing Obama said that I can fully agree with. But he said that in the same breath as saying that Nelson Mandela is his ideal and his hero and his model. But I thought you said targeting civilians with bombs is terrorism and unjustifiable, so how can you make Nelson Mandela your hero? But this is the kind of schizophrenia out there, and we've got people who are condemning the rioters right now, but idolizing Mandela, and he's not the worst, there's a whole lot of others like him, people wearing Che Guevara t-shirts and so on, I mean, really and truly, or let's take people like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Winston Churchill incinerated cities with 1,000 bomber raids. They aren't examples for us either. And we could continue. Personally, I don't think General Smuts is the kind of example I'd respect either. he mobilized the Air Force to bomb the Bushmen for not paying one rand tax. That was £1 at that stage, or £1 tax, dog tax. He mobilized the South African Air Force, stocked with camels, to bomb them because they were tax resistors. Not to mention the fact that he mobilized the Air Force to bomb rioters and protesters in Benoni and Brakpan during the miners' riots in the 1920s. I don't think Jan Smuts is a good example either. But this is the thing. And no wonder you've got people today standing on top of bridges, throwing concrete blocks on motorists passing below, because if you've taught them this is what you respect, then can you be surprised when they do it? It also shows the inevitable consequences of the Marxist critical race theory, or CRT, the propaganda of race theory to incite a victim mentality that justifies blatant theft, brazen looting, and malicious damage to property. That's why you see a lot of people not even ashamed to be caught on camera. Sometimes even posting on their own sites, their own social media sites, they're looting and so on. Because they don't feel ashamed. They think it's good and it's noble and it's right. Which is why smashing cultural Marxism is one of the most constructive things we can do. Christianity has always been into destroying idols. In fact, throughout the whole Bible, you'll see the result of the gospel being preached, whether in the Old Testament or the New Testament, is destruction of idols. And one of the biggest idols we've got today is Marxism. This also highlights the failure of the churches. The rioting was still carrying on. The looting was still carrying on. Day 3 of the rioting, the South African Council of Churches suggested an amnesty for looters as part of a healing campaign. Can you imagine anything more irresponsible, stupid, wicked, malicious, damaging, eroding of everything than to, while people are still looting and rioting, suggest an amnesty for healing? You know, what goes on in these people's minds? Can anyone recall that passage of the Bible, "I, the Lord, hate robbery"? God hates theft and robbery. Chaos ensues when a church becomes non-essential. It's long overdue for churches to recognize that no politician has the right to describe their ministry as non-essential. In fact, the lockdown lunacy which deemed abortion clinics and casinos as essential, but churches as non-essential, cannot be accepted. How can any Christian accept that kind of nonsense? No Christians in China, North Korea, Russia and the Soviet Union, none of them would accept that. And now somehow we, oh, a bunch of cocaine sniffing, drug dealing, human trafficking, Marxist, murderous, terrorist scum tell me that the church is non-essential. So we better stay away from church and we can't worship and we've got to wear masks and all that. But why would one believe these people? They are professional liars and thieves. Not to mention Marxist, mass murderers. Just look at this picture. This is okay. This is fine. But you can't gather in church. This is not about health. You can crowd the airports. You can crowd macro. You can loot places. That's all fine. But you can't gather for worship even at 50% of capacity. It's a charade. Masquerade. The lockdown lunacy of allowing churches to be closed, sidelined and deemed non-essential, relegated to irrelevance, suffocate with time-wasting, money-wasting, unnecessary, unconstitutional, irrelevant regulations, restrictions. It's outrageous, and it shouldn't be accepted by anyone who has brains in his head or principles and backbone in his body. The chaos and the destruction hitting so much of South Africa today is not only a result of state policy and the failure of the criminal justice system to punish lawbreakers, it's also an indictment on those thousands of churches that have accepted what corrupt politicians have told them, that they are non-essential. Well, true churches are always essential. But any church which believes that fulfilling the Great Commission of our Lord Jesus Christ is non-essential has probably become non-essential. It's absolutely essential that churches wake up and open up and stand up and step out in faith and speak out, fighting the good fight of faith. We need an urgent call for prayer and action. We need to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. We need the Great Commission to be our supreme ambition. We need to be salt and light in a dark and a corrupt society. We need to love our neighbor as ourselves, and we need to do unto others as we want to be done unto. And one opportunity is coming up on 9th of August, we've got Monday, the 9th of August, National Women's Day, opportunity for outreachers, make a stand, as we have every year since 1995. Never has the message of our Lord Jesus Christ been more important, urgent now. To love your neighbor. To not do anything unto your neighbor that you wouldn't want to be done to yourself. To do to others what you want them to do to you. To even love your enemies. To do restitution. To not let the sun go down your wrath. I mean, has that message ever been more important than now? We need to make a difference. Make a positive difference. We need to have our minds renewed so we can be not conformed to this world, but transformed by the renewing of our minds. So we need to build dynamic congregations, home Bible study fellowships, and Christian action groups to make a positive difference in each community. We've seen what's happened from a year and a half of churches being locked down, stifled, suffocated, sidelined, and the result is worst chaos on our streets ever seen in this country. This is time for true churches to open up, no matter what the state says. And if they don't think they can do it in the buildings and their elders are against it, then open up home fellowships. But what we can't do is allow the church to be sidelined and to allow our Christian voice to be stifled. We're either part of the solution or we're part of the problem. Who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? So, questions, comments? Daniel?
Which groups are a part of the South African Council of Churches and how is that leadership structured?
South African Council of Churches is part of the World Council of Churches. They are liberal, they are leftist, they are officially pro-abortion. It consists of the Church of the Province of South Africa, the Anglicans, not the Church of England, which is the evangelical wing, but the Church of the Province of South Africa, which we call Anglicans in this country to distinguish from the Church of England in South Africa. So the Anglicans are part of it. The Methodists are the biggest part. They're the largest group. The most Presbyterian churches are. There are a few Presbyterian churches that aren't. But the bulk of the Presbyterians are. The Moravians, sadly, are. All of the Moravians started very, very well under Count Nicholas von Zinzendorf. I'm afraid they're now part of it. I think there are elements of the Lutheran Church has joined them here. They're not a majority of the church-going population in South Africa, but they're so-called mainstream denominations. I think more like lamestream, because it seems there's far more church attendance now amongst the Pentecostal, charismatic, evangelical groups that are not part of the Southern Council churches. But the backbone of the Southern Council churches, the Methodists, Anglicans, Presbyterians.
And would it be a few leaders from each of those denominations that seems to hold the sway within that group?
Correct. So before he became Archbishop of the Anglican Church, Desmond Tutu was the General Secretary of the South African Council Churches. Alan Busack was also once Secretary General of the South African Council Churches. Southern Council Churches have always been more political and leftist. They, for example, they're totally for abortion. They're totally for pornography. Your mind boggles saying, how is it possible that any church leaders could support abortion, pornography, state schooling, be hostile to homeschooling? You know, it's just like everything we stand for and that we see in the Bible, they're against and so on. And they've been cheering on the commies and all the rest. Calvin.
A lot of the riots, lineage, Joburg, KZN, London, and spread the rest of the country.
Well, I'm not complaining, but yes, I believe that part of it is because that's the heart of the country. You've got most of the population of the country is in KZN and Gauteng. And most of the economic heartland is in the Gauteng area. That's where most of the industries are. The most important port in South Africa is Durban, and that was the worst hit. So, first of all, you could say that that's where most of the supporters of Zuma are, and whether they were initiators or whether they were the targets, and the scapegoats remains to be proven, but I think it makes sense that basically what we've just seen is a civil war between the ANC. You've got one faction of the ANC fighting the other, or blaming the other, or setting up the other. So what you've got is ANC versus ANC, and that's their heartland, really, at the moment. KZN and Gauteng. Interesting, it didn't take place in Eastern Cape, Transkei area, which is also heartland ANC, but presumably there they don't have that same split. So I think this is reflecting a civil war in the ANC which spilled out in the streets that's affected everyone else. Andrew?
They tried to go to TE as well, but it was Apathy prevented the examiner from them recall the testimony that he.
Well, good for them. Just shows that you can make a difference by making a stand. Daniel?
How are the attacks on the filling stations focused?
I think that basically this was an idea to show a revolt, to create trouble. Now, whether it was the Zuma faction seeking to cause trouble to bring down Ramaphosa's government, or whether it was the Ramaphosa faction seeking to scapegoat the Zuma supporters to discredit them, to strengthen their hold, it's not too clear. I think we need a lot more investigation to find who was behind it. But plainly, it's the ANC versus the ANC.
I'm sorry, I actually meant physically. Like, what is the... Is it with the burning primarily, or a destruction of the...
Oh, okay. Well, the first thing is, if you're just thinking in terms of looting, there's things in the shop. But the burning of a petrol station, that is going to create a tremendous amount of problems, short of fuel, interruption of travel, the supply line for shops, big and small, and everything, ambulances. So basically, if you're thinking from a terrorist point of view or a revolutionary point of view, if you are hitting at radio stations, cell phone towers, communication, national highways, the trucks which are the artery, like our cells and our body are moved up and down the veins and the arteries of our body. So if they can, just like if you get a blockage in your artery, you can have a heart attack, or if it's in your brain, a stroke. So the idea was to create an economic stroke or heart attack, I think by strangling. This is part of the mentality behind terrorism.
And doing it through bombings in the filling station?
Well, you know, if they'd bombed these places, I think it would have done less damage. In fact, it's hard to imagine that you could have caused more damage by a war than they've done this way. This looks more destructive than a war. If a 1,000 bomber raid had come over, like in the Second World War, the RAF, and dropped 114,000 tons of bombs on Durban, I don't think it could have done as much damage as this looting and arson destruction has done. It would have done more damage in terms of loss of life, but in terms of damage to the economy, the way they've hit distribution centres, key at harvest time, the timing, absolutely extraordinary. And anyone could have predicted and told the government, and did, you lock up Jacob Zuma, there's going to be trouble. Of course, nobody expected this much trouble. But it's almost like the government wanted it. So whether they welcomed or enticed it, or whether they planned and orchestrated their own in order to scapegoat on his supporters and make him part of history, that remains to be seen. But what nobody's spoken about yet is the role of the Chinese behind us. And I see the Chinese hands behind us, because a lot of their competitors are being swept out. This happened in Zimbabwe. So in Zimbabwe, remember, what you had was a government that was already in the hands of the Chinese. Robert Mugabe was trained in China. He is funded by China. ZANU-PF was funded by China, armed by China. And yet there was a lot of informal traders and so on, and they were competitors for what the Chinese wanted to do. And so to get rid of the commercial farmers, they orchestrated a campaign against the whites. That then made Zimbabweans desperate for food and made the country starving and depends on foreign aid. But now they had those farms to strip mine, and that's where they found the Mereng diamond fields. And the Chinese are convinced that just like the valuable minerals under the Zimbabwe farms that obviously people had to starve for them to get them, but small price in their mind. In South Africa, they're convinced that under the many farms in South Africa, there's valuable minerals to be mined, which they're very hungry for these minerals. So I believe the Chinese have got an agenda with South Africa, which expropriation without compensation is part of, in order to get the mines, to get the minerals, and so on. Of course, that means starving South Africans. There's been a lot of resistance to expropriation without compensation, and so you need some more chaos to get the Chinese agenda advanced, because there's resistance. And also, they've killed the businesses of a lot of what would be the Chinese businessmen's competitors here for their junk that's produced cheaper than we can produce because they use slave labor. Can't beat that price. Now, we know this government's owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Chinese. And right now, I see Chinese hands behind us destabilize this country so that they can loot this country's resources, minerally, natural resources. And I think that they are on one particular side of this gender, and therefore for them to want to remove, in this case, remove the Zuma faction, which is to them an obstacle to the expropriation of compensation plan. They're getting in the EFF, Malema, Ramaphosa crowd that's for expropriation of compensation. It'll advance the Chinese agenda. I actually strongly suspect, that there's Chinese hands behind this, just as there's evidence that there were behind the destabilizing of America last year and the ousting of a president who was opposing China's role, bringing in a government that's, I mean, what you've got in the White House right now is basically Communist Party of China bought and paid for administration. And their dream choice, because America's being made weaker, China's able to now start to put pressure on Taiwan and so on. So I'm getting into international geopolitics, but the China dimension, they were behind the riots and the chaos in Zimbabwe, which destroyed the homes in winter of 1.5 million Zimbabweans. They wiped out all the informal traders in Harare, who took their place? The Chinese traders came in with their cheap junk, made the slave labor, and destroyed an entire community, just literally bulldozed them all out, burned everything out. And that happened 2005 in winter, 2005, the destruction of the informal traders in Harare. The way how they targeted the white farmers, targeted the informal traders, the Madibili, in Zimbabwe, they saw their threats. They got rid of them so that the Chinese could take control with their puppets. And I do believe that's their game plan here, but this is a far more complex country, and they weren't getting their agenda that easily. Vladimir Lenin said, never underestimate the value of constructive chaos. Communists believe, remember, they're Darwinians. They believe once upon a time there was nothing, and that nothing became something, that something became everything through a big explosion. So, you know, throw a bomb in a printing press, you get an encyclopedia. Throw a bomb in a junkyard, you get a jumbo jet. And so if you can just burn enough things down, you get utopia. Paradise will, the socialist man will come out of the ashes. And I've heard communists speak about, out of the ashes of Pretoria will arise the new Jerusalem. And that's the kind of mentality that they want to burn everything down to create their ideal communist man. Andrew?
How will this war affect the Jerusalem?
Well, I would hope this would affect it tremendously. But the big question is, are people depending for the news on SATV? If they are, they're going to have their mind filled with all kinds of distractions and nonsense, and might end up doing exactly what the culprits, the instigators of this whole disaster, want anyway. But I'd hope a lot of people are going to go to alternative news media and will not be listening to propaganda from the state. This is a state-orchestrated event. This is a chaos event, which I see the fingerprints of the whole government all over it. And it's impossible to believe that the police and the army and the state security agency were all that ill-prepared and that incompetent to not be able to handle this at all. And while there were some good individuals on the ground, uniformly they're testifying that they were undermined on every level from above. They were never given the supplies they needed to be able to handle all this, and they're often even commanded to stand by and do nothing. Heinrich?
I don't think it helps that our Minister of Defence has a primary school diploma.
Gee, that high. Yes. Defense is a very serious business, and I don't want to be mean, and women know that I'm not in the slightest anti-woman. I'm very, very, very pro-woman, but I don't think any woman has business being a Minister of Defense, just for starters. And the fact that most of Europe has got women Minister of Defense, I think, is really a disaster. You need men to be soldiers, men to be able to fight, and anybody who puts women into combat is a lowlife who deserves to be flogged, and that includes people like Bill Clinton, draft dodger, and Obama, who never served. And I cannot see how it is that the people who put women in combat are all people who haven't even served in the army themselves. I mean, that's unacceptable. But you need a Minister of Defense who's going to be aggressive in a war. And women are not designed to be Minister of Defense or soldiers. It's just that they give life. They're not meant to be killers. And so you need a killer instinct for a good general and a good soldier, and a woman shouldn't have that. She should be a caregiver, a nurturer, and a life giver. And so having woman minister of defense, I really see as a disaster. And when you go to the Bible, even when God was using Deborah to lead, she still had Barak as the general going in and doing the fighting. And while she is behind him, she is the prophetess, she is the judge and helping. And you've had some cases where Margaret Thatcher was the best man Britain had, because the men in Britain were obviously a bunch of wimps. And Margaret Thatcher rose the occasion. Sometimes God raised up a Deborah or someone like Margaret Thatcher as a judgment on worthless, cowardly, spineless men, males, who are not worthy to be called men. And she did a better job than any man in Britain had done as Prime Minister before her. But it's still a judgment on the men. It's a disgrace that there had to be a Deborah and that there had to be a Margaret Thatcher, because, you know, where were the men? And in fact, we know where they were. They were all skulking around and hiding in the campfires as the Song of Deborah rebukes them, because they were too scared. So, yes, I think it's a shame that South Africa, Britain, Germany, France, and a whole bunch of other countries have a female minister of defense. It's just, what does this say to our enemies? It just isn't right. In fact, I couldn't imagine Shaka Zulu having this general being a woman. You know, can you imagine? Just like, no. Yes?
I think we can all agree that the rights and stuff has made the ANC look very bad.
Yes.
Why would the ANC allow that to happen when it does that to their reputation? Well, their reputation is already ruined, but that just makes the decision even easier for people who want to maybe vote for DA or...
Yes, but you're thinking logically. And I certainly hope a lot of people are going to think like that. The trouble is, a lot of people are going to think whatever SATV tells them to think. And you've just seen how, I mean, just take what's gone on in America. You've got someone like Fauci, who used American taxpayers' money to fund gain of research of this, cooking up this virus in a Chinese bacteriological warfare laboratory. US taxpayers pay for it. It was illegal in America, so they shipped it off-site. And it's all coming out now that Fauci and his cohorts around him did this research, the worst medical crisis in world history in terms of the damage it's done to the economies, was paid for by America and cooked out of a lab in China with Fauci's knowledge, and he helped lie and cover up, and so did Zuckerberg and so on, and deleting off Facebook and the people on YouTube. They were deleting all this as fake news, and now the evidence out. It wasn't fake news. It is true. The coronavirus is man-made. It came out of a laboratory out of Wuhan, China, and the US taxpayer funded it. And yet, there's a lot of people who still support them. Why? Because they watch CNN and BBC, and they don't know how to think critically. So, yes, what the ANC's done is so destructive, but I think they've gotten away with so much. They're arrogant, and I think they can lie to the people, and if they can get people to wear masks for no good reason and deprive themselves of oxygen and to pump some untested vaccine, so-called, into their bloodstream, then they can get them to believe anything. So I'm inclined to think they're just so arrogant they think they can get away with this. Henry?
What would you say is the best channel to oppose the propaganda that they use with the state news?
Okay, so alternative news sources I use, I've put it in our security and survival handbook, a whole lot of sources I trust, and that would include, let's see, where's our security and survival handbook? I've put in there, for example, Assist News is one good source I use. The McIlvany Intelligence Advisor is my best source. McIlvany Intelligence Advisor puts out the G2, which is the most comprehensive. It'll just give one line on everything, and you can click on the live link if you want to go further into it, and gives on daily updates worldwide on geopolitics, on economics, on medical, virus, the whole lot, all the way down to crime and so on. So I find McIlvany Intelligence Advisor the best. Assist News is helpful. There's WorldNet Daily, which is another source that one can use. And aside from that, I've got a whole range of other direct contacts from people in those countries. But if you're talking about news media, now, Fox News in America is better than the rest, but I wouldn't accept everything. Tucker Carlson is good. There's Newsmax, which is better. There's One American News, which is excellent as well. Other sources people would recommend? Breitbart News, that's a very good source. That's up and coming. I should have mentioned them. Good. Other sources?
Stephen Crowther.
Where do we find him?
He does the whole Change My Mind series. I'm sure you've seen the talks. He sets up a table and he says...
Oh, that chap. Oh, yes, yes.
He's got a whole podcast now.
Yes.
And he's also got a good
news. Yes. Charlie Kirk, yes.
Epoch Times is another on the right.
Good, Epoch Times. So the main thing is to get into the alternative. And the point is, you get so much more truth per square inch. Whereas I've traveled around the world, and I've, as a guest speaker going through airport terminals, I've had to listen to the CNN, BBC, and so on so much. It's like, it's so tediously, repetitively shallow, stupid, mindless, unbelievable, that I just can't believe it. If I've got to watch a mainstream channel overseas, I'd rather listen to Al Jazeera and Russia Today than any of these Western pieces of propaganda. I don't know how you felt in London. How did you stay sane, JP?
I use alternative media all the time.
But you wouldn't bother with BBC unless you wanted to laugh, would you?
You can't. It's designed to basically denigrate the straight white male.
Yeah. Yes.
So in Europe, across the border, encourage, you know, everything that's against the values of Christendom and everything. It's just,
yeah, we can't even. We call it the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation. By the way, in Australia, there's Sky News Australia produces some good material. I'm quite impressed with what they can come out with. So I didn't know Australia had an alternative voice, but Sky News Australia is very sharp.
There's also the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro.
Yes. Ben Shapiro is good, but bear in mind, Ben Shapiro is not a Christian. And his personal views are on Christ is that he is a false prophet, literally. I mean, when he's been asked. So Ben Shapiro is not somebody I choose as my first, second, third, fourth, or fifth option. But he does have some very good things that he's got to say. But I prefer to hear from a dedicated Christian like Charlie Kirk.
I mean, I listen to what way out there stuff, like Republican Broadcasting Network, Patrick Slattery, Andrew Carrington, he coaches the show.
Well, now, if you're after really hardcore good material where they're not afraid of upsetting people, yes, then you go to Andrew Carrington, Hitchcock, and so on. I mean, he's got material. And if you want some other resources that will take people who don't want to get the mainstream views, there's Red Ice Radio, Red Ice TV, which is a Scandinavian option. Sorry? Yes. I mean, that's sometimes a refreshing change. But again, they're not Christians, so you can take some things, you can't take it all. Whereas Andrew Carrington Hitchcock is a dedicated evangelical Christian, so that makes all the difference.
Just going back to I agree that this is organized and that there's some shadow forces, and it's probably China and other forces. But it's not like, I mean, and we need a lot of things. We need defense. Guns have clearly been illustrated. What I see we lacking seriously is intel. Can't we have Zulu and Xhosa speaking people on these groups? They must have communicated somehow.
They did. It was not secret. And this is the thing that's so amazing.
It shows that we're not yet tapping into any intel whatsoever.
There were some people who knew about it. For example, this Captain Satoli and maybe they knew it was coming. They'd been monitoring. He knew exactly what was coming. He knew exactly what the targets were. It was blatant. It was open. It was clear. And they were even right down to, do we wear our ANC T-shirts or not? No. You know,
yeah.
It's, the communication's that blatant, right out in the open. So, yes, we should have better intel in that. Now, I might say that in the Cape, we've got some pretty good groups. Cape Exit does monitor what's going on. They know what's going on. And I've been given warnings sometimes about this road and that and what's coming up and taxi violence. And so it's important that you're in a network in your area and the neighborhood watches and so on, and that makes a difference. The point is, if people are trusting on the police and the government and the army, they will be sorely disappointed because they're around when you don't need them, but when you need them, they're not there. That's what the people in KZN discovered. You're on your own on a time like that. They just were gone. And they all came back after the private security companies had restored order and the private citizens had restored order that came in for the photo ops. So
our community groups need to have intel.
Yes.
I'm not saying we're using the official state intel because they know it's fake. They're not going to tell us.
Not until it's too late.
Yeah.
So yes, telling us afterwards. Yes, we knew about this and very nice to know afterwards. How about telling us ahead of time? I mean, what good's intelligence unless you get it beforehand?
Becky Taylor was on the TV the whole day the next day, walking through already looted areas. Like, anybody was eventually starting to say, well, they've seen on their phone there's stuff going on like around the corner from him. Why isn't he there?
Because there's danger there.
Exactly.
Okay, this is slightly off the topic, but it illustrates the point. When we had the bombing in 1998 in Plant Hollywood in the waterfront, I took my family the next night to the waterfront. We had the whole waterfront to ourselves. We had a whole restaurant to ourselves. Because I knew nothing had happened. I mean, there's police all over the place and police vans because people are too scared to go to the waterfront. Day after, the best time to go. No queues, no parking problems. And we literally had the whole of this restaurant that we'd want to go to for a while to ourselves. But that's the point. That's the mentality of these guys. Where do they put the police? Where does the police commissioner go? Where there's already been rioting.
Yeah.
It's a nice photo op, and there's no danger. What they should be doing is going to where they're about to hit and actually stopping it. I mean, that would show some courage and intelligence.
I think something good that's come out of this is strengthening the gun association.
Yes. Correct. This is super important. Before the end of this month, please, everybody should send in a message to your elected representative to oppose the Firearm Control Act. In fact, the debate should be dead in the water because we would be in a far worse state and far more lives would have been lost and far more property would have been destroyed if it hadn't been for legal guns in the hands of responsible citizens who not only saved malls and warehouses and communities, but he saved policemen and police stations too. It seems that the high-ups didn't care about them either. They were expendables. It's just plain that the only way to beat a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And legal firearm owners aren't the problem. It's the illegal firearm owners. They're the problem. And so taking them away from law-abiding citizens isn't going to do anything except make the work environments of the criminals safer for the criminal and worse for all of us. So let's speak up against the Firearm Control Act, encourage those who are fighting against it, make your voice known, inform others, because even if you don't have a firearm, you are helped by those who do. And so even the presence of one firearm amongst 20 citizens makes us all a lot safer. And so that's important to communicate. Toby?
The firearm control amendment is close to the public.
I believe we've got till the end of this month to give our feedback. I saw an email to that effect today. And dear SA, Freedom of Religion SA, Freedom Front Plus and others are speaking out on this. Of course, SAGA, Southern Gun Owners Association, GOZA, Gun Owners of South Africa, have been very involved in fighting against us. So any support we can give to them and speak up for them. But using our social media, we did deal with this a couple of months back in Reformation Society on is it right for firearm owners to be for Christians to be armed. I did an article for this for Joy magazine, which is out right now on the shelves and very well timed too. You'll notice that I've put a lot of what we dealt with tonight, the text, the stats, although the stats are being updated on the web all the time. There's a hardcore printout on the table. Help yourself when you leave. We've also got it on the frontlinemissionessays.org website, and we've got on Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website, or HMS School of Christian Journalism website. So share that around, and the audios, the videos. I've done a number of radio programs already on this, including on Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, where we get the most in-depth behind on the real story of what was behind the riots in South Africa.